Hi, I'm Chris Cotnor, executive producer of the DSR Network. We've been incredibly busy here over the past month. With the launch of TNR's Daily Blast, we now produce 10 shows covering foreign policy, national security, domestic politics, cyber and tech, legal, and much more. We've also just launched our redesigned website at thedsrnetwork.com. With all this content, there has never been a better time to become a member. Members receive an ad-free listening experience, bonus content for nearly all of our shows, early access to episodes, enhanced show notes, and access to our exclusive DSR Slack community. Membership is just $7 per month or $70 per year. To become a member, please visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy. Thank you very much for your support.
Hi, this is Riley Fessler. Foreign policy was a key feature of President Biden's State of the Union. So our episode from the archive this week is a look at which of the U.S.'s allies are the most annoying and the ways in which we're a pretty annoying ally ourselves. We hope you enjoy.
Nine. 12. 10, 28, 2, 23.
This is Deep State Radio, coming to you direct from our super secret studio in the third sub-basement of the Ministry of Snark in Washington, D.C., and from other undisclosed locations across America and around the world.
Hello. Welcome to this podcast. I'm your host, David Rothkopf, coming to you from Washington, D.C., and I am joined by Corey Shockey of the American Enterprise Institute. Hi, Corey.
Hello, David.
And Ed Luce of the Financial Times. How are you doing, Ed?
Great to see you, David.
And Rosa Brooks of Georgetown University Law Center. Is there a school in there? What
no,
do you mean by law center?
We just consider ourselves the center of law.
The center of law. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. Hi, Rosa. How are you?
Hi, David.
So, you know, we had a conversation a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about America's most annoying allies. Well, we were talking about Israel, and we were like, you know, here is this ally. It's a really important ally, but they're not supporting us in Ukraine. They're a little too close to Russia. They're very difficult. They don't listen to us. They play politics within our own country. And I think this led someone, perhaps it was you, Rosa.
With allies like that, who needs adversaries?
Exactly. And we just sort of thought, well, are they the only annoying ally out there? They are most annoying allies. Who else would be on our list of annoying allies? And how can we straighten them out? You know, we'll start with you, Corey. Just pick one.
While it is tempting to pick one of our allies that may be less difficult but more annoying, right? Like the wealthy, self-satisfied, safe Western Europeans who condescend to us while expecting us to defend them.
That certainly isn't.
That's annoying.
That's annoying.
Yeah.
That's annoying.
Yeah. It's annoying, but in fact, they contribute in ways that we don't always acknowledge of them. And while it's true that every time I get on a train in Germany, I think, wow, I sure wish we had somebody protecting us so that we could spend money on trains like this, because, wow, that'd be great in the golden state of California. Germany is, in fact, a great American ally. And one of the things we underestimate is the burden Germany bore of being where all of us would defend our interests forward instead of having to defend them on our own territory.
This is allied apology. I mean, you know, Germany is an annoying ally. You could pick them, but pick somebody.
Yeah. Let's see. I think... Can I pick historically or does it have to be at the moment, David?
I would say right now. Right now.
Okay. Well, right now, in that case, I'm going to pick the United States of America.
Oh. Hey, that's not fair. I was going to pick us too. Oh, man.
Well, okay, I guess, Ed, that leaves you with the easy ground of picking Turkey. So go ahead. Go ahead.
No. Okay. I won't. I will give Rosa America.
We have several annoying allies. How about that? What if we each get to pick several?
Pick several. Go ahead. Have at it.
Well, let's see. There would be Luxembourg under the leadership of Jacques Poos, who in 1991, when Europe wouldn't intervene by itself in the Balkans, proudly announced this was the hour of Europe rather than the hour of the United States. That's a pretty high standard for annoying American.
I think
allies.
Emmanuel Macron announces that every morning in the shower.
Yeah, but France at least could defend itself, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take the bait on Turkey. But here I would suggest that the United States bears part of the burden. And because we have gone these, 10 years in which we were unwilling to find a bargain that Turkey could sign up to on Syria, where I feel like our policy has been completely disingenuous to say, yes, it's true that, Kurdish separatists count as terrorists in Turkey, but we're going to arm and support related Kurdish groups in Syria because that's actually in our interest. Our failure to find a compromise on that issue, I think, has driven Turkey in unhelpful directions. But of course, none of that excuses the fact that first Prime Minister and then President Erdogan is flat out playing the authoritarian playbook of cracking down on civil society, of closing newspapers, clearing out political opposition by claiming they were involved in the 2016 attempted overthrow of the government, of being indignant at the United States when American judges did not find the claims that Turkish citizens who've taken refuge in the United States were part of that coup attempt. Turkey, but again, so Erdogan is driving Turkey further authoritarian. I promise I'll stop in a minute, David. Second, I am homesick for the days when at the start of Erdogan's prime ministership, Turkey had a positive aspiration of creating an Islamic Union that was a parallel to the European Union. And I think the fact that they are now so crassly playing both sides of the Russian-Ukraine war shows how far they've fallen from that.
Remember, Ed, when Barack Obama was only a year into his presidency and people were trying to get him a gotcha on his lack of foreign policy experience, and they said, "Hey, Mr. President, who's your favorite foreign leader?" And he said, Erdogan?
I think he switched that after a while to Manmohan Singh. He was a decent leader, unfortunately, he paved the way for Modi. And Obama liked Modi, too, which is like a real puzzle. Anyway, I'm straining at the leash really here to say France, just because I'm British and the French, they're always there, and from De Gaulle onwards have always sort of demanded the sort of I guess, the mind share that they haven't really earned. And they want to be on the podium. They want to be have their noses raised higher than others, etc. So my English sort of francophobia is sorely tempted, but I'm not going to choose France because I think allies should be like friends, critical when it's merited. And I think actually this is where Britain is a pretty annoying ally in that it is uncritical. That Tony Blair was a force multiplier for the Iraq war rather than a check when France and Germany were correctly opposing the Iraq war. That's what good allies do. They didn't just say, oh, the price of being an ally of the superpower is we support it in every venture. Britain, at least with the exception of Vietnam, has always done that. And in some cases, it's wrong. And right now, I think on China policy, Britain as a whole, this conservative government, is attempting to be Mike Pompeo or Josh Hawley on China. And I find that reckless. And I don't think that's what a good ally does. And so I'm going to have to choose my own country of Britain. Much as I'd like to poke the French in the eye, I'm going to resist.
That's quite noble, I guess. It's big of you to overlook the Battle of Hastings.
We won the Battle of Hastings.
Glad you could correct that. And Laurence Olivier was terrific around Agincourt. I mean, it was terrific.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It was a
high point. Go on, Rosa. These guys are reluctant. I mean, we've got Israel, we've got Turkey, and I mean, we got Turkey even without Corey mentioning Sweden and their desire to keep Sweden out of the EU. We've got Ed, who's vacillating between England and France as though either country mattered anymore. What do you think?
Well, I was going to nominate three. First of all, I was gonna go with the UK because they're a lot like us, and yet they're, if possible, even more messed up right now. That's simultaneously annoying and kind of a relief to see somebody who's even more messed up than we are. But it's also quite annoying because at a moment when it'd be really nice to have a strong, internally strong and coherent ally in the UK, we really don't have that. We have them doing various bonkers things that Ed has helped to elucidate for us over the last few years.
That Ed has helped illustrate for us.
Elucidate.
I see.
Then I was going to nominate Canada because they're always trying to make us look bad by being nice, and Justin Trudeau's way too good looking. We hate that. And, you know, they're polite.
Wow.
And we just really hate them. You know, they're sort of like us, except
better.
Nicer, smaller, better. And that's extremely irritating. And, you know, they're very self-righteous about how much better they are, and we can't stand it. And then I was going to go back to, you know, what Corey started with, which is, I think we're our own most annoying ally. And you know, it sort of goes without saying, that's perhaps also the same as saying we're our own worst enemy. We're both our own worst ally and our own worst enemy. You know, that we, our inability to get our own act together, we constantly self-sabotage in all kinds of ways. And we talked in our last episode about the summit for democracies, not the summit of or in or with, but for democracies. And you know, our own democratic fragility, our own difficulties in sustaining and strengthening either our internal democratic norms and systems, our domestic economy, et cetera, you know, they constantly cripple us and make it difficult for us to be effective when it comes to our foreign policy because we're so busy being screwed up here at home. So those are my nominees, Canada, the UK, and our very own selves.
Corey, Hungary's in NATO. What's going on here?
Oh, it's David.
Yeah. Go on, Corey. Hungary's
I feel
in NATO.
Like we should make David answer without knowing
we
what the
make
question
David
is.
Answer without David, yeah.
That would be usual.
Yeah. And he'll just
Come up with an answer that will fit any possible question we might have asked.
Just pick a country, David, and then we'll tell you whether you're right. Just name one country.
Turkey.
Correct. Ooh, correct. You are correct. That was correct. Now name another country, and then you can guess what the question is.
I heard Hungary, so I'll go with that.
So if Hungary and Turkey are correct answers, what's the question?
Why are they in NATO?
Well, that's close. What we're discussing here today, David,
this is the sign of an ace reporter. He can figure out the question without even hearing it.
No, this is a sign of a Harvard graduate. He is so full of shit that he is trained to do this. And I know, Rosa, I get it. You too. But
you know what my dad always used to say? You can always tell a Harvard man, but you can't tell him much.
Could we start the Columbia preparatory school jokes now?
No. My dad always said about Columbia was that a guy walks into a urinal and pees and starts to walk out, and the guy next to him says, "You know, at Harvard we wash our hands after we pee," and the other guy says, "Well, Columbia we don't piss on our hands." anyway, David, I'm going to give you a breather here. Corey, doesn't Hungary belong on this list?
Yeah, the democratic backsliding in Hungary is incredibly dangerous for the people of Hungary, and not just for them, but for their neighbors. The way Orban is now moving against Ukraine on the argument that ethnic Hungarians living in Ukrainian territory are being subjected to, unbearable restrictions in elementary school and other places. Moreover, he has held up European Union funding for Ukraine and is threatening that he won't participate in sanctions against Russia, which Hungary has threatened several times before as a way to try and leverage an end to restrictions on Hungary by the EU for undemocratic legislation and moving against free press and an independent judiciary. The problem, of course, that both NATO and the EU have is that when they added new members in the 1990s and the early 2000s, we set standards that those countries had to meet. And countries met them at the initiation, and many no longer meet them. And Turkey, when it was admitted in the 1950s, those standards Turkey wasn't subjected to those standards in the 1950s, nor was Greece, by the way, which was also a military dictatorship at the time of their admission, I think. And so, we have raised the standard with time. It's appropriate to raise the standard with time, but those institutions have the same problem. Their foot is caught in the same wolf trap that President Biden's foot is caught in with his summit submerged under democracy, or whatever it was we agreed on was the right terminology in last week's, which is that what do you do about partial compliance? How do you vote people off the island? And of course, those people would have to agree to the terms on which they were voted off the island because of unanimity in decision making in NATO. And so we're stuck with an alliance that is closer to its original standards, which is we the countries that participate, agree we will assist each other if one is attacked, and that assistance is to be determined, than the current interpretation of we are free societies with common values that agree we will commit military force to
each
other's
defense. Okay, so we got 10 minutes left here. I know Dr. Sanger has just joined us, and I'm going to go to him next. But we've mentioned as annoying allies Israel, Turkey, Hungary, Britain, France, Germany in passing, the United States, and Canada because they're too nice and their prime minister is too good looking. David, you get to pick one other country, and we'll go pretty quickly. Everybody get a couple of minutes here to clean up the list.
David, you actually
nobody he lists says to one, me, but you as can David have three well knows. That are annoying, America's most annoying allies.
Oh, you didn't do Japan and South Korea?
Go for it.
All yours.
So the problem that we've run into here is, I think, threefold. The first part, Corey, is laid out. What do you do with democratic nations that aren't all that democratic? The second you run into is, what do you do, and he alluded to this, with countries that sign up to Article 5 in NATO but don't agree about what it is that needs to be done? And we've had cyber attacks on all of the major NATO countries, and they've done nothing in response to it, right? Even though a few years ago they determined that cyber could be an Article 5 violation. And then the third problem you run into is, what do you do with non-NATO countries, but close allies, who are busy complaining at each other? And that's why there was such joy the other day that President Yoon went to Japan, hung out in the Ginza with the prime minister, had some of his favorite noodle dishes, because he suggested that under the strain of dealing with China, these two were finally willing not to put aside their differences, but to basically ignore their differences for a while. And that might be the best we can hope for a bit. That's why President Yoon is being invited to a state dinner next month in Washington. So these are all, part of the issues of alliance management. And it's a reality. The big question in my mind is, does doing something like a democracy summit make this management process easier or harder? Because by choosing some people to invite and choosing others not to invite, it's kind of like, David, as you select panelists on state radio, right? Who did they decide wouldn't be all that appropriate?
It's not at all like that. But when some of those panelists arrive late, then they miss knowing that that's what we discussed last week's episode.
Of course, yeah.
In any event, no, our panelists are carefully selected because they're 100% perfect all the time. Ed, somehow, despite your great knowledge of the Middle East, nobody mentioned our Gulf allies.
Yeah, I was about to say, until a few minutes ago, David Sanger, we had a podcast for you, and now it's a podcast with you. And the other David is indicating it might turn into a podcast against you.
Would that be different from any other podcast you've ever had?
But it was a different, another spring day, coincidentally, that we discussed that last week. The Gulf allies, I'm a little bit sort of unclear as to whether they are technically actually allies. So I think they are friends and frenemies sometimes. Particularly the Saudis, who are now sort of moving rapidly towards the sort of Chinese sphere of influence, and the Russian to some degree. But the Emiratis, I think, are the more sort of the better bellwether of, the more rational, less capricious Gulf state. And they're making it clear they're hedging. They're hedging in a world where, that's turning increasingly bipolar. They'd like good relations with the United States. They'd like the United States to continue to basically provide the security cover for it. They're not entirely sure that that's going to be the case. And so, like Saudi Arabia, they want to make peace with Iran. And that is a sign of, some of the shifting geopolitical sands. But I think I understand the Emiratis, even though they're breaking every possible sanction and are arguably the chief haven for Russian oligarch money. I think I understand their sort of geopolitical hedging, because they are in a very, very dangerous neighborhood, and there's a lot of contentious futures forecasting going on.
No, I mean, we have Canada in this hemisphere, Corey, as an annoying ally. We haven't mentioned Mexico, although they being pretty annoying these days. Do you have an annoying ally in the Western Hemisphere?
Oh, plenty of them. I would nominate, so I take Ed's point about nominal versus actual allies, but the Rio Treaty of the 1940s had the original Article 5 clause, and all of the countries of the Western Hemisphere signed up to it. So we do have actual allies.
Well, also Argentina, we named a non-NATO ally during the Clinton administration.
When I was working in the Joint Staff as the NATO desk officer, Argentina formally applied for NATO membership. And the joke was, NATO is now the Northern and Southern Atlantic and Pacific Treaty Organization. Which, by the way, is coming true now that Australia, Japan, South Korea, and New Zealand heads of state participate in NATO summits. But I digress. I would suggest countries of Central America that that are fueling immigration because of corruption and a lack of law and order in their own countries. That's who I'd nominate from the Western Hemisphere.
David, could I nominate a non-Western one?
No, you can. This is going to be the last word.
It'll be brief.
On this podcast. It'll be brief. So go ahead.
So I remember covering President Bush and Pervez Musharraf, who sadly died recently, up at Camp David when, after 9/11, they were declared a major non-NATO. And just think about that. We're talking about Pakistan.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, well, that's a good point. There was a period there where everybody was an ally. It was like the Cold War was over, and, hey, become an ally. Join NATO. Be NATO plus one. Be Europe plus this. Be, you know. And, you know, we started to realize that it's hard to be an ally. It's you know, different from being a friend. The standards have got to go up. And but we're struggling with that now, certainly in multiple fronts. Well, this has been fascinating. I hope, trust that it has annoyed and alienated vast numbers of people around the world. But, you know, go back, right back at us. You know, we already said the U.S. is an annoying ally. And, you know, it's worth just thinking these things through a little bit. And I'm glad we did. And I'm glad you joined us, David, there at the end. And I'm glad that Rosa was with us. And I'm glad that you were here, Corey. And I'm glad that you were here, Ed. And I hope that everybody who is listening to this will join us for our next podcast. And we got tons each week. And by the end of this month, which is to say the month of April, there are going to be a couple of new podcasts on this, the ever-expanding DSR network. I don't know if you guys know this, although I told it to Corey the other day, but this past month, we passed 750,000 downloads in the month. And by the end of this year, we expect to pass 1 million downloads a month. Which is a big deal, because most of you folks out there listen to the whole podcast. So that's a lot of bandwidth. People are listening to 45 minutes each time they listen to the podcast. And although we're the world's smallest media company, that suggests to us that we have succeeded in one thing, and that is picking excellent fans and supporters. You guys are loyal. We are grateful. And for those of you who are not members, go to the DSRnetwork.com, click on membership, and be a member, because that's, you know, even better. Thanks to all of you. Bye-bye.